So you've decided to give up that old behavior that's been killing you and all you care for and surrender to a power greater than yourself. That's the first step. Surrender is what opens the prison door. Now it's time to walk through that door and into a whole new way of life. Spirituality, self-care, service, social connection, and the simple daily disciplines that pave the way to lasting freedom. This is Positive Sobriety. Welcome to another episode of the Positive Sobriety Podcast. Man, David, I really look forward to this conversation we have every week.
I do too. This is like, it's sort of like therapy, except with a lot of people.
Yeah. We got a great guest coming up. Before we get there, let's talk a little bit about one daily practice that helps in positive sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you one that I have picked up again. It still mystifies me as to why I ever let this one go, because it was so key to my success in early recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I'm back to it now and just enjoying it again like oxygen. It's daily journaling.
Yeah.
One of the best pieces of advice that I got early on in recovery was the sponsor who told me to sit down every day and write as fast as I could write for 20 minutes, never pick the pen up off the page.
Yeah.
And then when I was finished, tear it out, water it up, and throw it away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
As a way to kind of get my real self, my real thoughts on paper.
Yeah.
And I have found over time that when I just think, I tend to think in circles.
Mm-hmm.
But when I write in straight lines.
Right.
My journal takes me somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that in the last few years, I have been caught in some pretty large circles that I really need to escape from.
Yeah.
And also, journaling is a way for me, because I do try to feed my mind and heart daily with something that's intellectually stimulating, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I have a high evaporation rate for that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
But if I journal about what I'm reading,
mm-hmm.
It helps to nail it down a little bit. It also helps me to kind of tease out the practical implications of these new insights.
Yeah.
To tie them a little bit more closely to my daily life.
Yeah.
I have found, I don't know whether this is true for you, that it's important for me to journal with pen in hand, to do mm-hmm. pen and paper mm-hmm. rather. And I heard recently, I don't remember where, and so I can't cite the source, nor can I vouch entirely for its veracity. But what I heard was that the manual act of writing
mm-hmm.
actually engages both hemispheres of the brain
mm-hmm.
and helps for brain integration
mm.
in a way that looking at a screen and tapping with our fingers doesn't quite accomplish.
Mm. Yeah. Well, it's a little bit like hearing music only,
right?
You know, is only working with one half of your brain, and playing music is using both,
right?
You know, yeah. I agree, because there's that. You know, I write a lot, or a fair amount, for blogs and
sure.
some things like that, and when I've got a book project or something, there's all this writing, and writing helps me process, but mm-hmm. journaling is not writing for public consumption.
Right.
Journaling is, what do I really feel about this, and what is really going on, and where am I in the process, and what are my fears, what are my doubts, what am I experiencing, who do I resent, what's, you know, and I can put that all out, and as a and process it differently.
Yes.
Writing it out, thinking through, and feel like when you're done with that, you've had a kind of a form of prayer.
Yeah.
In a certain sense, an orchestrated sort of opportunity to be as rigorously honest as possible.
Yeah, I find when I journal, yeah, I write for me and God.
Yeah.
And I address some of what I need to make a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Part of health is I need to be making connections. So that spiritual connection is very important. So I will sometimes I find was as I'm writing,
mm-hmm.
I'll lapse from a conversation with myself to a conversation with God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there are those odd kind of really spooky moments when it almost feels to me like he's taking control of the pen for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I get an answer that seems to come from out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet, you know, it doesn't take that long to sit down. I mean, it takes specifically me 20 minutes to do.
Yeah.
I find 20 minutes to do all kinds of things during the day.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And yet something as helpful and productive as journaling, I let slip away for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And would only do it very, very sporadically.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working now, lately, for the past few weeks, I've been doing it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, I put the journal in a pocket in my car right behind the passenger seat.
Oh, wow.
So it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll find a time during the day. In fact, I have also found a special place
mm-hmm.
to journal
mm-hmm.
where I'm not likely to be interrupted.
Yeah.
It's not at home. At home, I'm very easily distracted or I get sucked into just kind of the sameness of that routine. So I've got a place to write that is not at home where I'm not likely to be. It's a peaceful place. I can sit down and I can write for 20 minutes. Yeah, I'm just passing that along to our listeners. If you haven't journaled in a while, or if you've never journaled before,
mm-hmm.
give it a shot.
Yeah, it's a great way to process things. We process things as we write, like you said, because we're thinking through a process as opposed to just a conversation where we get sidetracked and our minds wander and all that stuff. So.
Well, David, you've been out there networking. You're making friends all around the country, and you've got another very fascinating person.
We do. We have a lady today that is a psychotherapist, and some of our listeners may recognize her and her work and the people she's worked with as she tells some of her story and shares the work that she does in even celebrity-oriented rehab.
Okay.
So.
Well, I think we've teased it enough.
Stay
with us. We'll be right back on the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. We have a very special guest today, David.
Yes, we do. We have someone that has a lot of interesting things to say about recovery and enabling and family relationships and all kinds of things we could cover.
And a fascinating book with some incredible endorsements that I just finished this morning.
Yes.
Sherry Gaba is with us. Thank you so much, Sherry, for joining us.
My pleasure. I'm really excited to be here, and I always want to spread good information out there when it comes to recovery, codependency, addiction, and all that stuff.
Well, I'm assuming that because you're in this field, your story, much like ours, began with a journey of your own. Is that true? Do you have a recovery journey of your own?
I do. My journey is in the other program, which mm-hmm. is called Al-Anon. If you don't mind me saying the word, I know sometimes people are really particular, but that 12-step program is my 12-step program.
Gotcha.
Or at least that's how I began my journey. I was married to an alcoholic. All these things started happening around recovery at the same time. I got invited to be on celebrity rehab with Dr. Drew. So I found myself working in the field. I got a job at Promises Malibu, which was the famed, you know, Malibu rehab where all the celebrities went. Mm-hmm. And all these things were sort of coming at me. It's like I was attracting it in mm-hmm. some way. And then that led to my book called The Law of Sobriety, which is now called Infinite Recovery. And it really basically is about the law of attraction, that I really believe a lot of things that happened in my life, I attracted, the good and the bad. Mm. And so I noticed when I worked at rehabs, the clients really loved this idea of, you know, what you put into the universe, you receive back. And in many ways, 12 steps really is the law of attraction, because you have people sitting in a room and they're, you know, their intention is to stay sober and to work a program, and then that's attracted back to them. So I took these ideas from the law of attraction and wrote this book and was endorsed by Dr. Drew. And then recently I just changed the name to Infinite Recovery, because the word sobriety just isn't always, even though I don't have a problem with the word, people often have an issue with the word. It's kind of a negative word. So Infinite Recovery really kind of explains what I'm trying to do. And that was really, like I said, all of these things started coming into my life, like a book and a TV show and, you know, working at a rehab, being, and then of course, down the line, unfortunately, my ex-husband relapsed, and this was a really difficult journey. And so whatever I thought I knew about alcoholism was complete, and addiction was completely shaken up. Uh-huh. And I say that, you know, I was the professional and I understood everything intellectually. I even ran the family program at Promises. But, you know, once you're in the middle of the tornado with someone you love so dearly and they're struggling and there's nothing you can do, and you realize there's nothing you can do, I really understood codependency and addiction and the dance that these sort of partners find. They find each other. Yeah. You know, they really do. If there's no accident that he found me and I found him. And unfortunately, he still isn't sober. And, you know, I eventually was able to detach with love, but there was this really huge bond that we had, and it was really painful to let go.
Mm. What were some of the things that his disorder taught you about yourself, Sherry?
Oh, that's a good question. That I do not control the universe, and I do not control other people, and I don't have that power, and I am not a higher power. Mm-hmm. And everybody really has their own path, and I need to stay on my path. And I learned that I attract people that I think I'm going to fix or change. And I really learned this at quite an older age, which is fine, because I, like I say to people all the time, it's never too late. But just that, you know, you get what you get, and you accept what, you know, you accept who you're with. You know, if you can't accept, I have so many couples that come in, or I do coaching or therapy with these people, and they just think they're going to change. And the thing that I tell them is, this is it, you know, and you have no idea, you know, this is a one day at a time program. And if you love this person, like if someone's thinking about getting married, I don't discourage them and I don't encourage them. I say, just look at the reality. Is this okay with you that mm-hmm. love this alcoholic addict and want, and even though he's sober today or she's sober today, there are no guarantees. And can you live in that space?
Mm, yeah. And Sherry, you write a lot about codependency. You've got a codependency course. I mean, a kind of a workbook online at I know the wakeuprecovery.com. And with codependency comes, of course, enabling and things like that. And is our enabling, does it just have to do with intimate relationships or family relationships, or how do we find ourselves enabling in our day-to-day world?
So, you know, enabling is when you're doing something for someone that they can actually do for themselves. So you're kind of not allowing them to grow as a person. You're not allowing them to transform. And when I was separated from my ex, you know, he would ask for money, or he would say, I need gas for my car to go to work. And I still had not healed to where I am today. And so I would think, oh God, he has to get to work, instead of saying to myself, well, he's using the money for drugs and alcohol, so that really is his issue and he needs to reach his bottom. And I, you know, I would go there and I'd fill his car up. And, you know, it was like the codependent, our disease is the person. The alcoholic addict's disease is the substance. My disease is you. And, you know, if you're in pain, you know, if you need me to get in my car and drive and help you, you know, I put him in many rehabs. I had so many connections in the field because I was pretty well known and very highly respected. And, you know, I just kept picking up the pieces. So that's really what enabling is. I mean, one of the things I always use to ask myself to gauge whether I was enabling him eventually or helping him was to ask myself, was I supporting his recovery or am I enabling his disease? Mm. And that question's easier said than done. The bottom line is this: if the person you love is perfectly capable of handling a situation on their own and you are doing it for them, the most likely you're enabling them. So what you're doing when you enable is you're helping preserve and protect and maintain the problem, namely their addiction. So the other question you have to ask yourself is, am I allowing this person to experience the consequences of their behavior? And if not, you're again probably enabling. You think you're helping them, but really you're kind of co-signing what my sponsor used to say, co-signing their, you know what, bullshit.
Yeah, absolutely. Bullshit.
Then we'll go with bullshit.
Yeah. Right? This is a podcast. We can say what we want. I mean, you see people in their pain and suffering. You know, and I just want you to know that I have the deepest compassion for the disease. I love, most of my clients are, you know, either struggling or in recovery. And I think addict alcoholics are the most, you know, can be the most generous, have the biggest hearts, can be the most creative and intelligent people. And but their brain is wired differently, you know, and my brain is wired differently. You know, my go-to is based on my early trauma, and even for addicts too, it can be early trauma, is to rescue and to fix. And yours is to, I'm assuming you're both in recovery from addiction.
Right. Yeah.
You know, is your go-to when you're uncomfortable in your skin is to go for the substances. And so you mentioned that Wake Up Recovery program. So it's an online coaching program. It's really inexpensive because I'm very frustrated with what's out there in the world today when it comes to, I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and there are very few psychotherapists that are offering therapy, allowing people to use their insurance. I happen to allow people to use their insurance. I don't need to be a zillionaire and not make it available. I think it's disgusting that so many therapists will not work with addicts and alcoholics unless they're paid, you know, the big bucks, or they have to go to a big fancy rehab. So this online coaching program is a membership, and it's $19, and it's all the recovery you could possibly want for anyone that is struggling with addiction or someone struggling with codependency. And it kind of bridges the gap because, you know, remember, I don't know if you know what double winner meetings are, you probably do, where 12-step meetings where addicts and codependents go to a meeting together.
Oh, nice.
It's almost like a double winners online coaching program. And what I have found, and that's why it started out just for addicts and alcoholics. And then I started really realizing that codependency is everywhere. Mm. And it's actually what took my alcoholic ex out. You know, he couldn't say no at his job. He worked in the entertainment business, and he didn't have good boundaries, which is a big hallmark of having codependency, is not being able to say no, I will not do this, or, you know, whatever. And he fell off this, you know, I guess stairs or some kind of I don't know. See, he was up high putting costumes away and he fell down, broke his shoulder. And then, of course, you know, not being honest with himself, he was put on the, you know, the painkillers, which eventually led to his drug of choice, which is alcohol, and then other types of drugs. And so it was the codependency that took him out. And I don't think people really realize that it can be, besides fear is underneath addiction. So a lot of these people in my tribe are addict alcoholics, but they're struggling with codependency. And then I have other people that are just working on their codependency issues.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. As you know, this is the Positive Sobriety Podcast, and we try to.
I hope I'm being positive.
No, no, that's not a correction.
Not a correction at all. Okay. So one of the reasons why you are, just a model, an ideal guest, and that. Especially this book that you've recently retitled, Infinite Recovery.
Which, by the way, is available on Amazon, I have to throw out. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's where I got it.
Yeah.
You talk a lot about a positive approach to recovery, about things like affirmations, about getting our focus off what not to do and more and what we don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And more onto what we want to do and what we want to see and what we want to see happen.
What we want to create, exactly.
Yeah, expand on that.
So our life is a result of the choices we have made and where we put our thoughts, you know. And so for me, at, you know, the age that I'm at, if I look back without having lots of regrets, my abandonment issues, my fears, my beliefs that I wasn't good enough, my unworthiness, I chose and settled situations that weren't good for me because mm-hmm. I put that out there into the universe. So it really starts with you. It starts with having a relationship with yourself, connecting to you, feeling good about yourself. Because if you're out there dating or out there in the world trying to get a great job, but inside you really feel unworthy, you feel like, you know, no one's going to want you. Or if you're a woman and there's, you know, you'll say to yourself, oh, there's no good men out there. You're basically being really incongruent. So your actions have to match how you feel and believe on the inside.
Yeah.
Affirmations are a way to actually change negative thinking. It actually rewires your brain to have different thoughts. So coming up with affirmations that are positive, you know, the universe doesn't really discern between positive or negative. It's going to hear whatever you say. So if you're saying something like, you know, there's too many women out there and there's no guys out there. I don't know, whatever. I'm using dating, but, or I'll never get sober, or I'm a felon. No one will hire me. You're going to just keep repeating that over and over again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know in the program of the 12 steps, which I'm not sure if you guys are part of that program,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Or you talk about it or not, or maybe you're more, you don't talk about it, which I totally respect. You know, a lot of the ideas in there sometimes can be a little bit negative because, you know, mm-hmm. they'll say things like stinking thinking or, you know, in other words, it's coming from a place of lack instead of from a place of abundance. Although, again, I believe in that program. I think it's the foundation of everything. But I think you have to take what you can and leave the rest. I don't think going around in life thinking I'm different, you know, you can think your brain is different. That's fine. But you can also expand upon that and you can reach any desire that you want. You mm-hmm. don't have to go around saying I'm a stinking thinker. I am like less than because I'm an alcoholic or addict, or I'm less than because I've been, you know, I'm a codependent, or I'm less than because I, you know, it's about expanding into what you can do and what is possible. So a lot of times in my book, I talk about infinite intelligence. I talk about the God of your understanding. It doesn't have to be God. It can, and that's what we talk about also in the program. But I think a lot of young people today are really taking to this idea of infinite intelligence or, you know, consciousness, you mm-hmm. know, instead of just thinking about this man up there that's like going to shame you. It's more about a consciousness of what it is that you desire and believing that you are worthy of it and then asking for it. And most importantly, being allowed to receive it, you know? Yes. And my journey was to spend 4 years alone without a partner so I could start redoing my thought patterns around relationships. And I took up outrigger canoeing and I got into a 12-step program and I started working with these law of attraction principles and really dove even deeper into these law of attraction principles so that I could spread that information out to the world. And that's how Wake Up Recovery was created. It's really from my own experience and all of the teachers that I've had.
Wow. That's really interesting stuff. I wanted to go back one second, Sherry, to, you know, you were talking about some of the negative things that we pick up sometimes in the program and we also, that we bring with us. It's not, you know, the program is, necessarily dishing it up to us as much as, I wonder how much of our own shame that we project onto, as people suffering with, you know, addiction and substance issues and chronic behavioral issues, you know, we come in with so much shame. And yet, that seems to drive our behavior, you know. So how do you talk a lot with people about how to break that shame cycle so that they're not so that they can change the narrative that they say to themselves?
I love that question, and you're absolutely right, because if you're holding on to shame, you're blocking your energy field, and how can you really get anything positive coming your way if you are still blocked with all of that shame and trauma? And shame often comes from trauma, and a lot of, and then of course maybe the behaviors that you participated in your disease. It's about getting that energy out. It's about sitting down. I work with people. I do somatic experiencing, which comes from Peter Levine's work, Waking the Tiger. And I can do this work. I've been trained in it. And it's about allowing people to notice where that shame is in their body, you know, where, and then you go through different experiences that you had that made you feel shameful, and then being the witness of that shame rather than being the shame, because that's the thing. You're walking around being the shame. So I'm saying, notice the shame in your body, be the curious witness of it, and then allow it to move. It's not about like, oh, make it go away or talk to the hand or, you know, I shouldn't have, you can't do that because it's inside of you, but you can start noticing it as energy. You know, like if I asked one of you right now, when you were in your worst part of your disease, what do you notice in your body?
Mm.
Where do you feel that energy of that bottom?
Mm. That's a good question.
It's not a thinking. It's not like in your brain. Yeah. It's more of an energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say in my stomach.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I was sick all the time.
Right.
but yeah, I would say that.
Yeah.
And then did either of you ever have early trauma? Like did you grow up with addicts, alcoholics, neglected, abandoned, any of those things?
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
Okay. No. All right. So where do you notice that?
Trauma here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know Gabor Mate's work. He does a lot on trauma. He'd be a great guest for your show. But where do you feel that trauma? Where do you feel that early wounding?
Boy.
Go, Nate.
What happened? She turned the tables on us, David.
She became the therapist on us before we knew it.
She's asking me these hard questions. Thankfully, I'm 20 years out from active addiction, so I don't remember. I'm a sex addict, recovering sex addict, by the way. Uh-huh. Thank you for that little piece of coaching in your book.
Great. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. It's not a remembering in your brain. It's a remembering in your body.
Right.
And so it's just something to think about, that if something comes up during your day, you know, anyone listening to this podcast, you know, and something starts to feel embarrassing or shameful or uncomfortable, where is it? Notice it, you know, because really addiction, and when you're noticing it, you're connecting to yourself instead of looking for something outside of yourself to fix you. You know, I'm a codependent, so I have a wonderful relationship right now. I have a great boyfriend. But you know what? When I don't hear from him, that little girl in me goes, okay, you know, I'm feeling abandoned right now, which comes from early trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then I kind of notice it. And I'm like, okay, there it is. And then I connect back to myself and realize that that outside thing is not going to fill me up ever. Mm-hmm. Nothing will ever fill me up enough to make up for what I never received early on.
Have you heard the expression, scratch an addict, you find a codependent?
No, I love that. You got to text, you have to email that to me. Oh. Is that a popular saying?
No, I don't know, but I heard it years ago and it stuck. And so I have repeated it quite often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I really felt like it described me very well.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. I mean, any addiction, any process addiction, sex, love, codependency, food, internet, gambling, social media, all of these things are our attempt to get out of ourselves and to crave, we're craving something else to make us feel good. You know, needing validation, needing approval, all of those things, gossip, all of the, you know, really what it is addiction is really distraction. Uh-huh. It's like, what do I have to do to distract from what is so uncomfortable right now? And guess what? Nobody ever died from uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah.
I, Interesting. I just had a conversation earlier this morning with Jay Stringer, author of that great book, Unwanted. And he's wondering, he's a psychotherapist in Seattle. And he said, I know we talk a lot about acting out, especially around sex addiction, as medication. And I know he said there's certainly an element of truth to that. Mm-hmm. He said, but I wonder whether also in going back to these shameful behaviors, we are reinforcing judgments. That we want to confirm, we actually want to confirm this terrible thing that we've come to believe about ourselves.
The judgments that were imposed upon us?
Or judgments by others? The way we have told our own story and described ourselves internally.
Huh. What do you think, Sherry?
I think that there is judgment there, and then it creates this belief system, and it just keeps you stuck. I mean, I do believe you have to remember who you are. I mean, you were that at one time.
Yeah.
See, I don't believe, and this is very controversial, but like, I don't think you're an alcoholic till you take that drink. Uh-huh. I think it's when you take the drink, then it takes over.
Yeah.
Just like a sex addict. You're not a sex addict until you start, doing
right.
what you do on porn or prostitutes or whatever else. And then you're off. So I think there is a lot of judgment by just constantly calling ourselves out. Like, even when I say I'm a codependent, I'm a love addict, it's like, ooh, that doesn't have a really good ring to it. and I understand we need identifying markers, but I think the 12-step, really does say, they say it, stay in the solution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of the problem. Like, that's real recovery to me.
Yeah.
Sherry, what would be a takeaway, like if I could remember only one thing today to help me with my tendency to enable or to distinguish between what you said earlier that was so great about the difference between enabling the person in their disease or helping them in their recovery. What's like one thing that I could keep in my head, a question to ask myself, or a principle to keep in mind? Because I deal with family members as well as loved ones and partners and spouses and all of that, and it is really a constant challenge for people who love the person they're trying to help to know the difference between. Is taking the car away love, or is it making it such that this person's going to have to work that much harder at their at staying in their disease to what I'm saying? I mean,
say a couple of things. I would say what I said earlier, are you supporting the recovery or enabling the disease? So that's
right.
That's the first thing. Like, am I, if I'm putting gas in this guy's car, or I'm driving, or I'm running, and finding rehabs, and doing all the work. Yeah. I'm probably enabling, because that person can do that for themselves. Most likely they may not want to do it for themselves, but listen, before there was rehab, people just like walked into a 12-step meeting and got sober. So they know what to do. Mm-hmm. They don't need you to do it for them. So that would be one thing. The other thing is really understand what your boundaries are. Where does your line in the sand? Like, what are you willing to really do, and what are you willing not to do? And be really clear. One of the times that I separated from my ex and he came back, I was clear. You have to go to meetings, you got to get a sponsor, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, he didn't. And then I just didn't care. So, I mean, I cared, but I figured, okay, acceptance. This is just what's going to be. I have to just accept. Well, you know what? It wasn't acceptable. But I let him stay. And so here I am with this resentment. What I should have said is, you need to go. Like I said, that was my boundary to come back here. If you want to live here, this is what you need to do. When he didn't do that, I was enabling him, because the deal was, you need to leave if you don't do this. Mm-hmm. But my addiction of him, kept me going, okay, well, I can accept. And it was just wrong, because it had the same outcome. He ended up relapsing, and, I had to go through more pain. So you got to be really clear. What is your line in the sand? And really, really stick to it. And then the other thing is, what's happening to you physically and mentally and spiritually? Because for me, I was physically, spiritually, and mentally bankrupt. I got shingles. I was depressed. I really was traumatized. I had kidney stones. I had a staph infection, started losing hair. All these things were happening to me because I was just so addicted to this person trying to save him. That is not healthy. So you have to look at your life and go, how is this affecting me personally?
Yeah.
And my life becoming out of control. Because if it is, then I need to remove myself from this situation. And you can do it with love and compassion. I have no anger towards my ex. I only send him love and light because I hope I don't get that call one day that he's dead, which I'm afraid may happen. There's only two places left, either jail or, because he's done, you know, thousands of rehabs, but it's either jail or death, and it's sad, but I'm not angry. I send him love and light, and that's what we need to learn to do because it is a disease when they begin that journey of using again or whatever.
Right.
Hey, Sherry, I have to ask you a bit of a Hollywood question.
Here we go.
I don't want you to divulge certainly any confidences, anything.
Uh-huh.
I do admit that I was addicted to Celebrity Rehab.
Yeah.
Allie and I used to watch it religiously.
Yes.
Celebrity Rehab? Oh, okay.
Yeah, back in the day. Uh-huh. I remember you from the show.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Nashville, I know David, you and I both have interacted with mm-hmm. folks who have a very public life,
right,
and a very private problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a special entrance in our suite, actually. We really do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You don't sit in the waiting room.
I have a great deal of compassion for people who carry the added weight of celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
It feels to me as though the task of recovery can be more difficult for them. They face challenges the rest of us don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have yes people all around them doing everything for them. And if they don't give them what they want, then they may be out of a job.
Wow.
So it's ridiculous. And it's so much harder for them. It is. And then they have more scrutiny. And then they have so much, they have a lot of money. And unfortunately, that sometimes allows them to just keep going and going and going and going. And I think it is much harder for them. I do. I really do.
Yeah. What kind of...
Let's be grateful for poverty.
Honestly, I'm not kidding. You're not kidding. I mean, really, like, because when they're like, when I worked at Promises, I also used to work with these oil men. I mean, they were just like dripping in money and they just kept coming back. And I'm not going to say that wealthy people can't get sober, but I just think that's one of the issues is their bottoms just aren't the same as the average person's bottom. I mean, right now I'm thinking about my ex and I hate to break his anonymity, but nobody will know who I'm talking about because I'm not using his name, but he came into some money, Social Security, some back pay. Right. That's the worst thing that could have happened to him.
Right, yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Sherry, did you guys get, pushback on the show, the celebrity recovery, because celebrity rehab. I mean, did you get pushback from people about the concept of the show?
All the time. I still do. I mean, people go, it's an anonymous program. We have these, 12-step people that mm-hmm. believe that we're breaking anonymity, but I totally disagree. These celebrities that were on the show wanted to be on the show. A lot of them were in poverty at the time. A lot of them did not have any money and they needed money. And this was a way for them to get money and get sober. And I see nothing wrong with that. And we all have a right to make a living. And this is how, they did it. And they, worked a program. A lot of people will say, oh, but this one died and this one died. Well, the percentage that died from the show are the same percentage that die in any program. It's just that it looks bad because it's like out there in the world to see. But, it was a real program. I was hired to do all the therapy behind the scenes. I think I aired maybe 3 times. I wasn't, like with Bob and Drew and mm-hmm. Shelley, that wasn't my thing. I was the one that like sort of did all the work behind the scenes. And it was great. And it was just an amazing experience. And I think that some of them stayed sober and some of them died and some of them didn't stay sober. And that's just the nature of recovery. But at least it brought rehab to the world. Like people could see what really goes on in a rehab. And of course it's entertainment. So did they do things to make it a little sexier? Sure. Like playing ball in the swimming pool or, whatever. But it really was a program and it really allowed people to see what goes on, you know, in a rehab.
Yeah. Did you enjoy the time you had with it?
Oh, it was a blast. It was great. It was really hard when it was over, though, because I had all this notoriety and I was, my book had come out and I was, you know, going around speaking, and it was real. And then I had to stay in check with my own ego, because then when it was over, it was over. Mm. That was it, you know? And so I had to create my own, you know, my own brand. Like I was sort of attached to Drew on some level, and he actually gave me the confidence to say, you can do this, Sherry, you know, you got this. And so kind of been doing my own thing. I've had a couple of radio shows myself. I wrote another book called The Marriage and Relationship Junkie. And then I created this online program. So, you know, it was really cool. And then I had to like stay in check with like, well, who am I and what do I want to bring to the world?
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering if that was a something you had to confront, because sometimes when we work with people that other people might recognize, even though we can't necessarily talk about them, you know, we can kind of, I know that people can kind of lose themselves in the shadow of these larger than life.
Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly no celebrity, and I'm certainly like not someone people would know, you know, but I was on TV, and so it gave me this little, I mean, you know, how many people can say that in a lifetime? Oh, I got to be on TV. This is cool. And then I was called all the time, you know, to be on CNN or HLN or Showbiz, what is it called? Showbiz Tonight, Biography Channel. You know, in the old days, we used to talk a lot about the addicts, but it's kind of changed now. Now it's all about opiate addiction. I mean, before we would talk about alcoholic addict deaths. Now we just mostly talk about the epidemic.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is actually better, because, you know, somebody dying, like, you know, that's, and why are we talking about it? You know, there's a zillion other people dying that aren't celebrities. Like, mm-hmm. Let's talk about everybody here, not just mm-hmm. celebrities.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then how often do you see, you know, someone like, I don't think Robert Downey Jr. talks about it, but how often does the news like show hope stories? Like, look at this person that's got sobriety and this person.
Yeah.
You know, it's changing a little. Like, I think Bradley Pitt was on or talking about, you know, how he got sober and, you know, how he met the greatest people in 12 steps. And I was so happy to see that, because that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about the hope and the inspiration.
Yeah,
absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly.
Well, remind us again of how our listeners can get in touch with you and get connected with the program that you've created.
Will you have any links on the, you know, on iTunes or on your website or anything? Will there be any links?
I'll put a link in the show notes. Mm-hmm. We have very abbreviated show notes, but we desperately need to expand.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
Well, I'll just give the short version. I mean, I have a couple of, just wakeuprecovery.com, wakeuprecovery.com. They can find my online coaching. My books are on Amazon, Infinite Recovery, The Marriage and Relationship Junkie. And then if they just want to write me and have some questions, I'm very easy. You can engage anytime you want. It's sherrygaba.com, sherrygaba.com. And I also publish a magazine called Recovery Today, which I think you guys had.
We had Rob on. It was a great episode.
Yeah. Rob is my partner. And
how we met you. That's right.
Yeah, he's great. And the owner of the magazine is amazing as well. I'm sure he talked about Greg. And, mm-hmm. you know, we're just spreading hope everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, we're excited and so grateful for what you're doing.
Absolutely.
You too. You keep spreading a good message. I know it isn't easy to get a podcast out there and to keep it going and doing the interviews. I mean, I'm sure it's a labor of love, but I know that it's hard work too. So, you know, I give you a lot of credit as well.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah. Listeners, stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
Welcome back to the Positive Sobriety Podcast. And Nate, that was a really great time with Sherry Gable.
Yeah, she's a very engaging, energetic,
positive
positive woman. curious, speaks her mind.
Yes, absolutely.
I didn't feel like I was sitting in a lecture hall or anything, but I was learning throughout the conversation.
She didn't get the couch on us once, though.
I still don't know where I feel it in my body.
I'm going to have to really give that some thought, because I was starting to say, I'm starting to feel a little trauma right now. But that is so good.
I know she's on to something. I
mean, she absolutely is.
Certainly. Yeah. The body keeps the score. We do know that.
Yeah, Van de Kolk and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and I love that she has put her creativity to work and come up with a way, an affordable way, that people can get some support in recovery, especially around codependency.
Yeah, she's done a remarkable thing with her workshop online, and I'd really encourage people to check it out. If you're a loved one of someone who's struggling, this would be a very practical way for you to get some really good tools.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the calendar is filling up with more great guests coming down the pike.
Yes, and here's a twist, Nate.
What's that?
People are starting to email us and ask to be on the show.
Oh! Isn't that?
As opposed to the crying and begging we usually do.
We're not mugging people any longer?
No, we're not kidnapping, nothing.
That's amazing.
We could put the van in the garage.
And we're also getting some great letters.
We are.
Got a wonderful response to our
listener mail.
Yeah, mail episode. And we would love, we respond, whether privately or, your letter may never get on the air, but we love hearing from listeners. Love to hear your story. Love to hear your questions, your comments, your pushback, your suggestions for guests. And you can reach us at that very simple email address, positivesobrietypodcast@gmail.com.
There you go.
Well, time has flown. Once again, I think we're ready to wrap. So until next time, I'm Nate.
I'm David.
And we are your pals on the Positive Sobriety Podcast.
The Positive Sobriety Podcast is recorded at Crossroads for the Nations in Brentwood, Tennessee. Live producer Rex Schnelli, music by Rex Schnelli, theme music by Matt Ulrich, hair and makeup by Lyle Lovett, wardrobe by Kathy Gifford.